The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at advanced medical testing centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Hello, and welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli, and for the next hour, so much information that you can use to improve the status of your health, the way your energy supports you all through the day, the way your sleep is very, very healing, and you create a whole background of beneficial health effects when you learn the things that we have to share here on Natural Doc Radio. One of the things that we're going to talk about today has to do with some disagreement about science. And isn't that always the way? When we disagree, sometimes new thought processes enter into the picture, and that disagreement leads to moving forward with our knowledge, moving forward with the ways we understand how nutrition works, how good sleep works, how social interaction works. So what I'm referring to is an article in a magazine that I get that is kind of like a weekly Reader's Digest almost. And it has to do with an article written by a gentleman, Alex Barrizo, and he is writing for RealClearScience.com. Now, up until this point, RealClearScience.com has been one of my kind of supportive websites, a website that really does give you the kind of information you need to make informed, scientifically based decisions. Well, Alex is writing about the Democrats' hypocrisy on science. So it's kind of interesting. He's saying, imagine if 73% of Republicans in Congress voted to ban schools from teaching climate change. And he's saying that ardently pro-science Democrats and the media would be furious if that were to happen, making somber declarations. This is a quotation he has, making somber declarations of impending educational and scientific collapse. Well, House of Representatives just voted on something of tremendous scientific importance, a bill blocking states from requiring genetically modified food to carry special labels, and it was opposed by 73% of Democrats. It's interesting because Alex goes on to quote that there are over 1,700 studies concluding that genetically modified organisms are safe. And he says that among scientists, GMOs are as accepted. And this is where I think he falls down the rabbit hole. Among scientists, GMOs are as accepted as vaccines, evolution, anthropogenic climate change, but thanks to fear-mongering by the $72 billion organic food industry, many liberals have swallowed the Luddite propaganda against bioengineered foods. Good morning, Dr. Slavin.
Good morning, Janet.
What do you think of what Alex has to say?
Well, I just think, and not only in that instance, but in general, if you have nothing to hide, why hide it? And that seems to be what's happening here. When it comes to genetically modified organisms, they want to prevent the public from knowing which food, you know, preventing labeling of food so they don't know which are genetically modified. And, it, you know, I can't help myself.
Oh.
But
maybe
don't scrub the server if you have nothing to hide. You know, it's the same thing. You know, you just leave it out there. But, you know, if you have something to hide, that's what you do. You scrub the server, or you block attempts to let the public know what's in there.
What I have to say is, why do we have to politicize science? And why do we have to politicize this radio show?
Because unfortunately, science is politicized.
Okay, but a true scientific argument, you can bring your philosophical approach to your scientific argument, but to categorize all Republicans as being scientifically above board and all Democrats because of this specific instance as ignoring this overwhelming 1,700 individual studies, you know, I'm sorry. I think that we need to get more real, clear science. And unfortunately, he's muddying the waters and not being so clear, not presenting two sides.
Well, you know, are there two sides to 2 + 2? There shouldn't be.
Well, science is not so clear cut. You know, in the name of science, we used to drain blood from people's arms in order to have them recover from an illness. So I understand the benefits of that. But in certain cases, it was misused, grossly misused.
And, you know, unfortunately, people have to realize science is politicized at every level. You go for a second opinion because you just want to make sure that, they're both following the same guidelines. And how often is a second opinion different from the first opinion? Give you an example. I had a patient, fell off a roof and fractured his pelvis in several places. Goes to a doctor, I guess, in the emergency room and sees the orthopedist, says, you have to have surgery. We've got to screw all those fractures together. Another orthopedist says, no, you just take it easy. It'll heal up. And that's what he did. And it did heal up. So I'm just saying.
And
this is unfortunate because if you're a healthcare consumer and you can't necessarily trust the opinion you're getting from one doctor versus another, it becomes very difficult to make a decision.
And I understand different opinions, and that's where I'm talking about, you know, acknowledging different philosophical perspectives. But science, let's look at the pile of facts over here and the pile of facts over here. And I just find this article in Real Clear Science and his viewpoint being expressed in such a strong way very interesting. The week after, or 2 weeks after, Monsanto invited all members of the media to tour their facilities and to hear their side of the story. And certainly you can hear their side of the story, but when you force someone to make that choice that Monsanto wants made, I think that that's a pretty important issue. Shouldn't be politicized. We should make our decisions based on the overwhelming science of it. We are in a scientific experiment now with regard to the GMOs. There's no question about that. And there's very good studies that this gentleman is not mentioning with regard to fertility, digestive problems, mental issues.
I'm going to mention what guides my thought process.
Okay.
I have never seen man improve upon nature.
There you go.
You know, so the minute we start manipulating, and here you're really manipulating things down to its genetic level, genes, we don't even know what Pandora's box we're opening there. And, you know, I'm just against it. You know, I haven't seen people eating all these synthetic foods better than people eating natural foods.
And here's a way that I think he's gone wide of the scientific mark that we are looking for to make informed decisions. Genetically engineered foods. Okay, so that they have engineered these foods not necessarily to be more nutritious. They are not engineered with that focus in mind, but that's what he is putting out there. Yes.
Well, let me just say the original marketing of genetically modified foods and taking that approach was to say we can grow more foods because there's a food shortage around the world, and we could do it more cheaply because we'll be able to buy these herbicides and pesticides, spray the crops, and only the unwanted weeds will die and the crops will remain. And overall food production will be cheaper. Well, it's turning out not to be cheaper because things are becoming resistant to these pesticides and herbicides. So farms have to buy more. But that's just smoke and mirrors, because what's really behind GMO foods is that Monsanto is controlling the food supply, because you have to buy the seeds from them every year, because unlike conventional farming where they would save the seeds from the plants each growing season and replant them, the seeds they have created are infertile. In other words, you have to buy fresh seeds every year from Monsanto. They are controlling everything. And what's even worse is if seeds from an adjacent field happen to fly over onto your field, and now you're growing genetically modified foods, even though you didn't want to.
Unwillingly.
Monsanto now claims that you owe them money.
In the words of Henry Kissinger, I believe, if you want to control the governments, control the energy, oil. If you want to control the people, control the food. Very interesting. So this gentleman goes on and he's saying that these, that we have been propagandized to misunderstand these bioengineered foods are more nutritious and more pest resistant. No, those foods are not pest resistant. Those foods resist succumbing to multiple applications of a pesticide. So he has gone very far wide of the mark. And one would think that someone writing a column for Real Clear Science would understand that differentiation.
Well, they've even gone a step further. You have the genetically modified foods, and you have also the genetically engineered foods. And those have built-in pesticides. So they've incorporated the pesticide into the food itself. What happens when you eat those pesticides? It kills your own bacteria.
Okay.
Starters.
Has any one of our listeners ever seen what a pesticide does to an insect? It's a very, very sobering situation. That music means that you're tuned to Natural Doc Radio, and we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with lots more information that's going to support your health. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned with the current state of your heart and blood vessels? Advanced Medical Testing Centers, your premier blood draw center, draws for Singulex Labs, which offers specialized blood tests that can help you uncover hidden cardiovascular disease that other tests may miss. Talk to your doctor today about the Singulex tests and call Advanced Medical Testing Centers to schedule your blood draw. We guarantee your on-time appointment and guarantee the lowest price. Call us at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a proud sponsor of Natural Doc Radio, which airs on this station each weekday morning at 10 a.m.
Janet Cimarelli is a licensed nutrition counselor and co-host of Natural Doc Radio. Are you in search of the fountain of youth, trying to figure out how to stay young and healthy? There are three main factors that will determine how well you age. The good news is you can take control of all of them and dramatically slow down your aging process. Through her remote counseling sessions, she works with many clients to help them manage these three areas to stay young, vibrant, and healthy. She can help you maintain optimal health that will have you looking and feeling young again. She offers sessions through telephone, Skype, or email. Sessions are 30 minutes long, and she provides you with the in-depth knowledge and information you need to slow the aging process. Schedule your appointment today at JanetCimarelli.com. Don't wait. Your clock is ticking.
And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin this morning. And as always, lots of great information to support your good health. And so I'm going to kind of close off our initial discussion with regard to genetically modified organisms and the way to be certain you're not knowingly consuming a genetically modified organism, choose organic foods. Choose organically raised livestock, beef, chicken. Stay away from farmed fish. Very important, because there is genetic manipulation in the feed of farm-raised fish and great pollution to our oceans. You want as much as possible organically raised vegetables, fruits, nuts and seeds, grains and beans.
Very, very difficult to eat out anymore.
Well, okay. Here's another thing. We were talking about that having genetically modified foods was going to reduce the cost of food, and when you take a look at how much food costs today versus 10 years ago and 20 years ago, there's an enormous increase in the cost of our food. Take a look at the cost of a dozen eggs, a quart of milk, breads. Well,
there are a lot of moving parts here in agriculture, because the family farms are being taken over by these mega farms or industrial farms. So it's agriculture is changing, and not to the better. But luckily, there are still a lot of farmers growing organic. And as the demand increases for organic, I think maybe they'll grow as well.
I think that you can find very reasonably priced organic food choices. One of the things I was talking about with someone was the concept of eating seasonally. Remember that? Here in Florida, we kind of have a 365-day season. The growing season literally is for different crops all year long. And we no longer have that seasonal approach to eating. What is very abundant in the particular season?
Again, the more you deviate from nature, the more trouble you're going to run into throughout mankind. They always ate seasonally. They didn't have, you know, refrigeration, preservation, you know, just whatever was growing, that's what they ate fresh. And whatever they could store to hold them over in times when there wasn't an abundance of food to be had, you know, they had that. And one could argue, and this is what they always do, they have, but we're living longer today than ever before, because look at the changes we've made. And, you know, that point of view can be argued as well. You know, against that point of view, that we're not living longer than ever before.
You were talking about that yesterday, Dr. Slavin, and it's just fun with numbers, manipulation. Yeah,
exactly. But I want to go into this story. I had a patient, and you know, good medicine, you do tests routinely. You don't wait for a patient to get sick before you do a test. And the test we did was an EKG, electrocardiogram. And the EKG, I saw a very subtle change on it. And this patient is in his late 70s. So I said, okay, let's just further evaluate it, see what's going on. By the way, the patient has no complaints, no chest pain, no shortness of breath,
happy
exercises.
Day.
You know, I'm just,
Yay.
You know, but you still, you know, you can't ignore it. You have to evaluate it. The approach should be gather up all the information and then you decide what you want to do. So the EKG was a little abnormal. So we went a little bit further and, I think the patient wanted to go to a cardiologist and I said, fine. Really to find what, you know, what significance there is. We did a echocardiogram, which showed that the heart was functioning well, a 50% or greater ejection fraction. Because that's a magic number, by the way, that 50% number. So he goes to the cardiologist, and they have to do their thing. And again, it's very important. Get second opinions, because each of them are going to do things in a slightly different way. So he had a stress test with a perfusion scan attached on it, because that's what you really want to have. And what that means is when you do a stress test, you're walking on a treadmill on incline and they're, you know, putting a little stress on the heart. And then the perfusion scan, which is done right after you finish that, scans the heart. They have to inject something so they can see the how much blood is getting to the heart muscle, because that's the key. With stress, is your heart getting enough blood flow? So that's the perfusion scan. And, you know, then, so the perfusion scan was a little bit suggestive of a problem, but still no symptoms. And then they did a CT angiogram. This is also just a minimally invasive test. Instead of going into the artery in your leg, they just inject into the vein in your arm, like drawing blood, and they can look at all the blood vessels in the heart. And they saw some blockages, some significant blockages, by the way.
I have a question, Dr. Yes. Slavin. The CT angiogram, is there very significant radiation exposure or minimal? Or somewhere in between.
The key is compared to what? The CT angiogram, yes, it's a CAT scan, so there is radiation exposure. But compared to a cardiac catheterization, there's less. Cardiac catheterization is more exposure.
Okay.
So you had that test. That shows some severe blockages. And then, so right away, the cardiologist suggesting bypass surgery. Because of the severity of the blockages. Meanwhile,
cardiologists do.
He's having no symptoms, but he's scared out of his mind now. I mean,
might the phrase "you're a ticking time bomb" have come into the conversation?
But it's so easy to do that, and you really scare the people. Now, what you have to keep in mind is the patient didn't change. In other words, nothing happened to him. That change in the EKG may have been present for the last 6 months, the last time we did the EKG. Who knows? He had no symptoms.
His stress level went up considerably.
Well, for sure. And again, you know, he's approaching 80. And you have to wonder, okay, does the benefits of a bypass operation outweigh the risk? Now, we've talked about this over and over again where they show that it really doesn't outweigh the risk. And here's the other important point. We're talking about 80 to 90% blockages with no symptoms. To me, that means he's developed his own collateral circulation.
Right.
See what you have to understand is what bypass surgery is the artificial placement of collateral circulation. You take veins from your leg and bypass the blockage in your coronary artery. So that's creating collateral circulation. So if he had an 80 to 90% blockage and no symptoms, he's developed his own collateral circulation. And that happens. And that's why older people survive heart attacks much more easily than younger people, because the younger person hasn't developed collateral circulation. There was a treatment we used to do, still being done, but we don't do it anymore, external counterpulsation. And that was a way to open up collateral circulation. And it was very effective. It was about a $7,000 treatment to treat coronary artery disease and all the symptoms associated with it, including congestive heart failure. But they opted for the $100,000 treatment. Can you imagine?
I just think I really do understand that, Dr. Slavin.
I think, right? I said, when it doesn't make sense, follow the money. And so I convinced the patient that number one, the bypass operation isn't going to reduce his risk of having a heart attack. And that's something that, you know, doesn't make sense to people, but you have to understand what they are treating. They're treating those mature plaque, the plaque that's stable, the plaque that isn't going to rupture and cause a heart attack. The immature plaque or the flat plaque, that's not being addressed with that procedure, and he may have those, but that's not being addressed with a bypass operation. That's why the studies show that your risk of having a heart attack doesn't go down with bypass. So you have to understand the real reason.
That you just said something in my mind that's huge. Having bypass surgery doesn't reduce the risk of your having a heart attack. I think if people heard that phrase, the whole basis of their health decision-making process would change.
Well, that's why, and it's tough to get a second opinion in this area because all the cardiologists have read the same book. So they're all going to give you the same opinion, basically. But I'm suggesting a little common sense be added to the equation. So you do the bypass operation, and there are indications for that. If your heart is not getting enough blood because of these blockages, and medication doesn't resolve the problem because the studies do show that medicated people do just as well as bypassed people, then the bypass operation may be a way to go. But then you have to weigh in the fact that there's as much as a 5 to 6 risk of death from the procedure itself, and a much higher risk of morbidity from it, not just from the surgery, but from being put on a heart lung bypass machine and with mental status changes and things like that. So it's not a benign procedure. So you really have to weigh the quality of your life. Now, I've asked patients, even this patient, I said, well, how do you feel? I feel fine. He exercises, does everything he wants, no limitations. So what's the benefit from the operation going to be when he's fine right now? His ejection fraction is good, no pain. I'm trying to convince myself, why should I recommend that he go along with bypass surgery? The indications...
Age being something to take into the decision-making process.
So the indication would be if he had a reduced ejection fraction in the probably in the 40 to 50%, there's going to be benefit to it. If you go below 40%, then the benefits wear off again with bypass because I think now the risks of the operation start to increase much more. So you really want to have a good reason. Now, it's always been, and this happens across the board in medicine, I see it all the time, when a procedure first comes around, now remember, how did we treat people before bypass operations?
Medically.
Gave them medication. How did we treat people before medication? Chelation therapy, believe it or not, that was mainstream medicine, chelation therapy.
Whoa.
And it was helping people. In fact, how do we know that it was helping people? Back at the in the 1940s, when chelation therapy was used to treat angina and coronary artery disease, the only medication at that time was nitroglycerin. Remember the pill you put under your tongue?
Right.
And to relieve the pain. And they were able to determine that bypass surgery made a significant difference based on the number of nitroglycerin tablets people used. The number they would need on a daily basis kept declining, so their blood flow was improving. Well, we'll take a break now.
Very interesting information. And unfortunately, we don't get a lot of that history. Many people are not aware of what used to be and what used to be successful. That music means we have to take a break here on Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Zimmerelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we'll be right back.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Dr. Herbert Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor. We are located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill, and you can find us on the web at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience, clean, comfortable, and efficient. We guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest price. We test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. We draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostic, Singulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call us today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
And welcome back to Natural Doc Radio. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we're talking about a patient making an informed decision about whether to have coronary bypass surgery. It's very, very astonishing to me, and I see it time and time again, that professionals, physicians with so much education have to use fear to manipulate their patients.
No, but I think they really believe what they're saying. I don't think they're just scaring the patient into doing something for their own benefit. You know, they're convinced that that's the approach, because every seminar they go to, if they're a cardiologist, that's the bias that's brought to those seminars. You know, you got to do bypass, you got to do angioplasty. So I was saying what I've seen happen across the board in medicine. So we spoke about in the 1940s, chelation was actually used by mainstream medicine. It made a difference because people's reliance on nitroglycerin tablets to control chest pain went down when they were treated with chelation therapy. Then in the 1960s, I think, or maybe late 1950s, early 1960s, they developed the heart-lung bypass machine. And it was originally used just to treat all the valve problems that people had. From rheumatic fever, for example, caused a lot of valvular heart valve problems. So they took care of that, and then they were looking for something to do. They had a lot of heart surgeons with no business. Ooh. So they said, well, why not bypass blockages in the heart? Because now we can do it because we've got a machine. We can stop the heart, operate it on it, but we can keep the blood oxygenated and circulating with the machine. So that's when they implemented that.
And at first, they weren't so good at it, and there was a lot of brain function issues because they weren't so adept at maintaining blood chemistry in an ideal area.
You know, but part of it is the equipment always gets better, so the technology improves and lowers the risk. But there's still a human component to it. Just the other day, one of my staff was telling me about a relative, I don't remember exactly the connection, had surgery, and they said he had two strokes while they were doing the surgery. And, of course, the consumer doesn't really put two and two together. He had two strokes because they messed up.
So, but, of course, it was the patient's fault that they had strokes.
Well, if you have a stroke during an operation, it's because the anesthesiologist allowed the blood pressure to drop, which can happen, which is a risk factor. They're giving anesthesia. Blood pressure can drop. Blood pressure drops. Not enough blood flow to the heart. I mean, to the brain, and you have a stroke. And this patient, I think this was an orthopedic procedure. It wasn't even anything to do with the brain or the heart. So I'm saying there's risks to be considered about everything. When I see that, that's why I try to keep people healthy and out of the, you know, hands of
the surgeons.
If you need it, you need it. But reduce the need for these procedures, because they're risky, even in the best of circumstances.
And when you have to have a procedure, there is very clear information about supporting yourself nutritionally and supplementally to have the very best outcome. Your liver be able to handle the anesthesia, your blood chemistry be good, your blood not too thick, not too thin, your immune system primed.
Now, we do a lot of chelation therapy. We've been doing it for over 20 years. But if a patient comes to me and says, I'd like to have chelation therapy, and I ask, do you smoke? He said, yeah. I said, stop smoking. You'll get a greater benefit from stopping smoking than getting chelation and continuing to smoke. Now, if you stop smoking and do chelation, that's a great combination. But so the people have to take responsibility for their their health, and you got to stop smoking if you're interested in getting healthy. And I don't see that happening. It's difficult to stop smoking, but you got to do a cold turkey. All these gums and patches and pills. I mean, it's great to sell. You know, this is great for the drug companies. They convince you you can't do it on your own, and you got to take all these helpers. They make lots of money, but but every time the patient fails because they haven't made up their mind to stop smoking. So back to the evolution of let's say, cardiovascular surgery regarding coronary artery disease. So from having no surgery, they went on to doing 300,000, 600,000 bypasses a year. And then the cardiologists were getting left out of the picture. So they said, wait a second, we can do an angioplasty, a balloon angioplasty, so we can get in on the action, you know, so before the heart bypass surgeon gets called, now the invasive cardiologist can do his thing. It sounded great. Minimally invasive, you know, you're going through an artery, you're opening up a blood vessel. One little problem. They would put the stent in. Well, first they didn't put stents in. First they did the angioplasty, the balloon angioplasty. So they ballooned the blockage. The balloon went there, they inflated the balloon, crushed the plaque, so they opened up the artery. And that worked very well, except they closed up again in a short time. So then they said, okay.
Because you never got to the underlying developmental issue.
Now, if the developmental issue is microtrauma to the interior of the lining or the endothelium, think about this. Isn't the balloon angioplasty, the ballooning of that blockage, creating even more microtrauma? Of course.
It would seem to me. Yes,
so,
indeed.
Anyway, so they would open it up with a balloon. Blood flow would increase. Patient did well until it blocked up again because that's what it's going to happen. That's
because they didn't address the issue. They addressed the very small point.
So then they came up with an idea. We're going to address the issue. We'll put a stent in there. You know, so that it's like a scaffolding. Now after they opened up the blockage, we're going to put this little metal stent to hold the area from restenosing, narrowing up again.
Kind of like a chain link fence, that
something
little
like that.
Webbing.
Yeah, and once that goes in, they can't be removed. And they found that it may have prolonged the time period of success, but they still clogged up in a large percentage of cases. So now what they use is a medicated stent, something that's supposed to help prevent that. Now, there is an indication for stents, and the original indication, it's interesting, the original indication for stents were people who were at high risk for bypass surgery. So they said, okay, you're at high risk. Let's do the stent approach.
High risk meaning that their risk of success and surviving the surgery would be...
The risk of surviving the surgery. Older patients, sicker patients. It's stressful on the body. So they said, we'll do a stent. But then it's evolved. Now everybody gets a stent before they get bypassed. It has nothing to do with whether you're a candidate or not. And I can see how you can take that approach. Well, stents are far less expensive.
And it's a step in this direction to overcoming your coronary issues.
But again, they're stenting a lot of people that don't need it. And here's my concern about stenting also. If you don't evaluate the patient properly, remember I said you do the perfusion scan, that you can have severe blockages, but your perfusion is still good because you have your own collateral circulation working.
And you get that collateral circulation by having regular exercise that raises your heart and respiration rate?
Well, the stress on the heart muscle, and the heart will demand, you know, blood vessels feeding it, and it'll grow your own collaterals or open up. They say they're there already. It's just a matter of opening them up. The minute you put stent in, all those collaterals close down.
I hate that. Dr. Slavin, what about niacin? What role might niacin play with regard to keeping those little collateral blood vessels open?
It's a hemodynamic situation. If you have a blockage, the pressure builds up behind the blockage, and that's where the collateral circulation opens up. When you remove the blockage, then the blood flows very easily, that that back pressure diminishes and the stents close up. So you've actually perhaps created a situation where you might be more susceptible to a heart attack because you've eliminated all your collaterals.
And the bottom line in this whole discussion is coronary heart disease, cardiovascular disease in the United States. What's the bottom line there?
It hasn't gone down. How do you know if a treatment is really working ultimately? Just look at the number.
Saving lives,
look
maybe?
At the number of deaths. Have the number of cardiac deaths gone down with all the approaches we're using between statins and then stents and bypasses? Has the number of cardiac deaths gone down? It doesn't seem to be. The same thing with cancer. You pick a type of cancer, and then you want to look at not the rate, because that can be manipulated. That's a percentage. But just the numbers. You know, how many people are dying from this cancer or that cancer? And if you take breast cancer, for example, basically the same number of women are dying from breast cancer over the last 50 years each year. Hasn't changed. So that tells me that, and I say this also with regard to prostate cancer, based on studies, published studies that make this point, that if you have the kind of cancer that's going to kill you, the treatments don't work. How many people are dying from cancer that are being treated for cancer? I venture to say most of them. How many people do you know with cancer that aren't going in for chemo and radiation and surgery? I would say the vast majority.
Right.
And how many people are dying from cancer? All those people being treated are still dying from cancer. They're not curing anybody. So that brings me back to the definition of how the FDA approves a chemotherapeutic agent. What is, you know, you would think, okay, this chemotherapy is approved to treat this cancer. What did that study have to show?
It has to show a reduction in size of the tumor, if it is a cancerous tumor.
That's all it is. Right. Reduce it by 50% and then you're good to go. You don't have to show that you cure anybody. You don't even have to show that someone lives longer, just that it reduces the size of the tumor. The only problem with that is once the body becomes resistant to that chemotherapeutic agent, the tumor grows back really fast. But the other cells that are also affected by the chemotherapy, namely your immune system cells, your white cells, your red cells, they don't bounce back as quickly and the patient dies quickly. Now, if chemotherapy were a benign treatment from the standpoint of side effects, you say, okay, maybe
I'll give it a try.
Yeah, but it's not. So the day you start chemotherapy, you don't feel good. Now, the question is, now, I don't know, so many cases over the years, one patient had breast cancer, you know, 50-year-old, in great shape, exercises all the time, they detect breast cancer, okay, we do the lumpectomy, we do the radiation and chemotherapy, then we do the bone marrow transplant. Why did she need a bone marrow transplant? Because the chemotherapy, you know, suppressed her bone marrow. And they say, well, we got to, you know, do the bone marrow transplant, and then the patient dies anyway. I'm just saying this is really not the best approach, but this is the best they have to offer right now. That's why I say it's so important for people to take control of their health so that they can reduce their risk of, in this case, breast cancer. Remember, in Japan, the incidence of breast cancer is 1 in 50 compared to 1 in 8 in this country. Why is that? One could argue maybe there's an overuse of birth control pills in this country, or maybe artificial hormone replacement therapy. Maybe the diet plays a role.
Or, unfortunately, an enormous exposure to chemical toxins in our environment. Dr. Slavin, we've talked about a lot of problems that have entered into the lives of people here. And what's interesting is there are some answers. There is some good news. And when I come back, one of the things I'd love to talk about with you are some of the tasks that AMT centers offers that will give people insight into the state of their health. And to our listeners, you're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Zamorelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via telephone, Skype, or email with convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at janetcimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on AM 1470 WNN.
Current medical treatment addresses problems and symptoms when your ship of health has gone aground, hit the shoals of disease, so to speak. Now, advanced medical testing helps to guide you through the stormy seas of disease. The information from high-tech lab tests such as Doctor's Data, SpectraCell, Cleveland Heart Lab, Access, Health Diagnostics Laboratory, and Genova. These advanced tests assist you and your doctor to navigate the treacherous waters of disease development. Call 754-216-2332 to find out more, or visit amtcenters.com. And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio, and I want to remind everyone that Natural Doc Radio is made possible by AMT Centers. It's Advanced Medical Testing Centers, and there are a whole range of blood tests available through AMT Centers that typically you would not find in just your routine blood testing procedures. So Dr. Slavin, of all of the tests based on what we've been talking about, let's say heart and circulatory disease, is there any particular tests that AMT Centers offers, or what would you suggest as a starting point for someone coming to AMT Centers?
Well, as I mentioned before, you know, we run the whole panel of tests because when someone, you just don't know how extensive the problems are in somebody. In fact, I had a patient yesterday, 16 years old. Now, you're feeling perfectly well, active, and her insulin level was high. So that's a real issue. You don't want to let that go unnoticed.
Think about how we feed our kids in school.
Hormones were out of balance. The vitamin D level was very low. So you have to check all these things and intervene. I mean, this is a 16-year-old. I venture to say that most 16-year-olds aren't getting these tests done. The assumption is, well, you feel good. Everything is fine. And I keep saying, just because you feel good doesn't mean you're not sick. So, you correct the hormonal imbalances, you correct the low vitamin D, you change the diet to get that insulin down. By the way, her blood sugar was normal. So if she had the routine test that most doctors do, it would have said everything is fine. Your blood sugar is normal, but insulin resistance is a major risk factor. So that's the whole idea. You want to make sure that, you know, I just don't get it. Why wouldn't you want to find out what's wrong so that you can correct it on your own through better dieting, eating the right foods, than waiting until the diabetes develops and now you're stuck taking pills or insulin shots. I mean, that's what we're trying to do here is, nip it in the bud when it's real easy to correct the problem just with that information. Now, everybody's worried about cholesterol, but what raises cholesterol levels is sugar and carbohydrate intake. So you want to know what's going on. What I've seen across the board, and it's very interesting, that when people have high sugar levels or insulin levels, their lipids in the blood go up. So there's a connection there. The only thing is the lipids take longer to go down than the sugar and insulin. So instead of treating the underlying problem, which is the sugar and insulin, they treat the lipids and they give you drugs to lower the lipids, but that's not the reason. That's not the problem. The problem is the sugar. Cut that out. So what I'm suggesting to people is 12-hour fasting. In fact, let's see, they say don't eat till after midnight. Well, people are usually going in for that test around 7 or 8 in the morning. So they're only fasting for 7 or 8 hours, and that may not be enough to get an accurate picture of your lipids. So you want to perhaps fast a little bit longer, maybe fast from 6 o'clock, at least a 12-hour fast. So, you know, maybe you'll get a more accurate picture. Maybe so many people wouldn't be treating the fats in the blood when what should be treated is the carbohydrates and the reflection of that being the sugar and insulin. And I suggested if that insulin level comes back elevated again when we retest, because you always have to keep in mind, too, if you have an unexpected abnormality on a blood test, maybe it's a lab error. Repeat that test before you go forward with anything.
I talk to people all the time. Make sure that if there's something out of range, that it could be a way that the blood sample was handled. It could be a variety of different things. I've even seen mix-ups with blood samples.
And there's another test that I recommended, if we have to down the line, is a glucose insulin tolerance test. Everybody, I think, have heard of the glucose tolerance test. We have to check insulin at the same time because you can have a normal glucose tolerance test, but identify insulin resistance. And that's something that needs to be dealt with. And Advanced Medical Testing Center does all these testing. The doctors usually don't bother in the office. It takes up too much time. You can do it to Quest or LabCorp, but I just find the attention to the people coming in just isn't there, and the accuracy or the timing, because they're just so busy, isn't there necessarily either. They usually miss a draw, because the way that test should be done is you get a fasting blood draw, and then you get your sugar challenge, and then you have it repeated in a half hour, 1 hour, and 2 hours. By 2 hours, everything should be back to normal. That would be a normal result, but you have to, you know, do the full test. You asked about other things. You know, really, almost everything revolves around sugar and carbohydrates, because when those are elevated or not as optimal as possible, you know, by the way, the ranges are so broad that we're saying a blood sugar of 99 is normal, when in reality, a blood sugar of 65 is way better, or is optimal compared to a 99 blood sugar.
A blood sugar of 65, you said?
Yeah. Okay. A lower blood sugar is a more optimal number, assuming that it's not a rebound hypoglycemia, which you might see also. So you have to always take things into context. And that's why you have to know what's going on. You look at the insulin level at the same time as the blood sugar to know what's going on. And if you don't do it, you just don't know. Another test I see done is the TSH level, thyroid stimulating hormone. That's normal. Everything is fine. But they don't check the actual thyroid hormone levels, and I've seen those can be anything, regardless of what the TSH says.
So what about iodine levels?
Iodine levels are a little tougher to evaluate.
Okay.
So I recommend, you know, every multivitamin, every good one has iodine in it.
Right.
If you're eating a healthy diet, you have iodine in the diet that you're eating, and I also recommend supplementing with iodine. What iodine does, it helps with the metabolism of estrogen. It helps with fat burning. It helps in preventing cysts throughout your body, the thyroid, the breast, the ovaries. So iodine deficiency is fairly common. Most people are not eating the right way, and they would iodize the salt, but people are being told avoid salt. So they're not getting that as a source of iodine.
Iodized salt is not readily available anymore.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. And lots of people are using Himalayan pink salt, which is full of trace minerals but not necessarily real high in iodine. As a matter of fact, in that Himalayan salt, the iodine content is quite low. And then sea salt. So there, again, there's a little bit of iodine, lots of other trace minerals, but you really do need to be attentive to iodine levels if you want proper supported thyroid function.
We went to a restaurant recently, I forget where it was, where The salt they put out was a block of salt,
mm-hmm.
and you had to take a grater or something to mm-hmm. get the salt.
A little scraping.
That's okay. probably a more natural way to get your salt
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. For sure. That is a much more natural way. It hasn't been processed. It hasn't had any non-caking
right.
agents added.
Yeah, so this is your natural salt. It's without those added ingredients. So most people, you know, we're used to eating the way we eat, and we don't realize how many ways the foods that we eat have been adulterated. So it's
true.
It's, you know, we could talk all day on
we
different
could,
things.
We could, and sometime we're going to start having
couple
the
things.
After show.
Al Foreman's going to be a guest tomorrow on tomorrow's show and tell us why he takes 150 vitamin supplements a day, and I'm looking forward to hearing that. Because he wasn't always a vitamin proponent. It was after his bypass surgery. Is that correct? So,
well, he yeah. was very much learning about the importance of natural supplementation, but there were other issues that began to crop up mm-hmm. that
okay.
Made his focus a little more pinpointed. And we are almost out of time.
And a week from this Saturday,
yes,
we're going to do another seminar going over all the different tests that are available, and insurances cover it. It's only to your benefit. So we'll keep you posted on the exact time for that test. And check out our website, naturaldocradio.com. You can get information there. And if you'd like to get lab work done, just give AMT Centers a call, 754-216-2332.
And that's just about it for Natural Doc Radio. We'll be back tomorrow, 10 a.m., right here on 870 a.m. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy.
The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of the station, its staff, management, or sponsors.